Thank you, Bob and Colleen. That sounded great. Thanks for leading us in song. I'm going to take some time today to unpack our gospel text from John chapter 2. I want to start with a quote that I came across this week and that really hit me pretty hard, and share it with you and kind of wrap my sermon around this one little thought. And here it is. Shame dies when we share stories in safe places. I'll repeat that again. Shame dies when we share stories in safe places. That quote comes from Anne Vosburgh. She's a Christian author up in Canada, I'm told, and it really struck me. I think shame is something that I know something about, and I think actually it's a universal experience, the feeling of shame. Just about 9 days ago, I had that feeling. Many of you know here, gathered in the parking lot, that I was diagnosed with COVID-19. Just about nine days ago. The good news, I really did experience a slight case. On one day, I had kind of a sinus headache, like the flowers were blooming, but it's the middle of January kind of thing. The next day, I had some congestion. On the third day, I was already clearing my symptoms. So it was a very much so a mild case that I experienced. I don't want to project what happened to me as what will happen to anybody else. From what I understand is that it is very different depending on the person. But the good news really for me is that no one in my family caught it, and I don't think I shared it with anybody else. So that's fantastic news. But I have to share with you, the feeling that I did experience was a sense of shame inside. Having to share that positive result with Alicia and then with my family and then even writing the email to the congregation, it was a little unsettling in my stomach. And just how I felt inside, I felt a little bit disgraced and shameful. That's how I felt. Maybe you can relate to that in some way this morning. You've experienced shame. Think of something that you've done that has brought shame into your life. You did something and then everybody around you heard about it. How did that feel? Maybe it felt like a turtle, like how a turtle likes to put their head into a shell and hide. Or you may have felt like you wanted to hide and not see anybody for a while. But what we want to remember here this morning is that quote that I mentioned at the very beginning. Shame dies when we share stories in safe places. Do you have a safe place to share your struggles, your hurts, your pains, your disgrace, your shame? In our gospel text from John chapter 2, this couple, a bride and a groom, there's no doubt that they figured out a way to handle the shame that they were experiencing. They experienced shame at a very deep and significant level that I want to explain here this morning. You see, they had likely done lots of things right in preparation for their wedding. They had selected the proper foods, and those foods were prepared for everyone to eat and partake. They had sent out the invitations for everyone to come. They had the accommodations all set and prepared. They had every detail ready for this big celebration. And by the way, this was probably the biggest community event in this little town called Cana at Galilee. Cana is probably the size of Philomath, maybe a little bit smaller, scholars say. And weddings in the first century were very much community, communal events, way more so than they are today. What do I mean by that? What I mean by that is that the blessing of a marriage between husband and wife was a great statement to the community in general that things were going to fare well for the town in the future. The thought was that the bride and the groom would have children. And those children would be the future building blocks of the town or the community that they were living in. The ongoing thought in the first century was that the bigger, the stronger, the more numerous the family size was, the better the community would prosper in the future. Well, it makes sense because you'd have people to work in the stores. You'd have the next generation to protect the city in case of a military conflict. You'd have economic expansion, these sorts of things. This wedding was the big event, and it took about a week-long celebration to celebrate all the things that were happening. But there's one thing that would have caused great disgrace, and it happens. The key element in this wedding is missing. That key element is wine. Now, in today's time and age, when I do weddings, it's typically the one thing that would really throw a wedding off is a wedding ring. If someone drops it or forgets, everyone would say, well, that, how can this move forward? The party's over. In the first century, the one thing that absolutely couldn't be missing was wine. The party would be over, and the marriage would ultimately be a disgrace. This would have been a social, psychological catastrophe for the bride and the groom. But Jesus is there, and he handles their shame. Jesus performs a bunch of miracles, or they're sometimes called signs in John's gospel. In verse 11 of what I just read, it mentioned this in the Greek, it's arche, which means beginning or the first of his signs. Jesus goes on to perform a bunch of signs, and I just want to list those off. We're going to talk about them in the Sundays to come. In John chapter 4, he heals a royal official's son. John chapter 5, a paralytic by the poolside at Bethsaida. John 6, he walks on water and feeds a crowd of 5,000. Then in John 9, he heals a man who's been blind from birth on the Sabbath. It's an amazing story. In John 11, he raises Lazarus from the dead. These are amazing signs that Jesus performs. We're going to talk about these leading up to the season of Lent and how they relate to us. And just to give you a picture of what's going on here, these signs are kind of like a scavenger hunt. If you've been on a scavenger hunt, the way those work is you get the first clue. You figure that out, it leads you to the second clue, you figure that out, you get to the third, fourth, and by the time you get down the road, you get a clear picture of what the prize is. That's what John is doing in his gospel. Through these signs of Jesus, 1, 2, 3, 4, we're being led to the ultimate prize. And what is that ultimate prize? We get a clear picture of how Jesus Christ is totally for us. So we want to know what each of these signs, how they're leading us closer to Jesus and who he is. That's what John's kind of relating and leading us to. All these signs are public events, except the wedding at Cana. No one's dying here and being raised. No one is walking out on water and everyone else is seeing on the side of the seashore, this sort of thing. Now, see, at the wedding at Cana, I don't know if you caught the detail, the only people who saw what Jesus had done were the attendants, the servants. Jesus quietly goes behind the scenes, and he performs the miracle, so no one else sees it. Why would he do that? For the bride and the groom. So that their marriage wouldn't be a disgrace. So that their standing in the community would be firm, so that their party wouldn't be a downer. And Jesus completely flips around their disgrace and their shame, and he brings his joy to the wedding and really provides amazing wine. Their marriage is blessed, and their standing in the community is sure.